This is Greater LA on KCRW. It's the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Rico Galliano, in for Steve Chiatakis. Imagine you're walking around your neighborhood and you see across from a fast food restaurant and a motorcycle shop a dense forest filled with exotic-looking trees from all over the world.
It's a jungle. It's fantastic.
This is Deborah Brider.
I've walked past it a million trillion times, and basically I just decided today spontaneously to come in for my first time to the garden.
The garden is Exotics Tropico Nursery. It is not a mirage. It's across the street from that beloved West Side institution, Okie Dog, on Fairfax and West Hollywood. And for plant lovers, Exotics is an institution itself. The owner, Leon Massoth, has been here since 1988, turning this tiny corner into a botanical wonderland. The plants he sells come from seeds he's collected from all over the world.
There have been times that I've been alone on a tropical mountain in some very steep trail and trying to find something and thinking, do my customers have any idea what I have to go through? You know, and then they want to say, why so expensive? You go to the jungle and find this plant, you know, and you tell me how much you want to charge for it.
Leon's on a quest to save rare plant species from extinction. But now his business, this nursery, is itself on the brink of disappearing. KCRW's Avishai Artsy has the story.
It is a small space, but you can still get lost in the narrow dirt walkways under the canopy of trees. Shelves are filled with cacti, vivid flowers, and plants with pink and orange leaves.
Every step here is something very, very special. This is a vine from Madagascar with beautiful purple flowers, a Cryptostegia. This is a palm I collected in Brazil, a new species of Cyagris.
Birds and butterflies dip in and out.
I have many visitors from all over the world come here who are real plant people, and they say it's the greatest collection of plants they've ever seen. But I have locals who come in and say, what a bunch of junk. So it's all in the eyes of the beholder.
Leon Massoth is a swarthy guy. His button-down shirt is always unbuttoned halfway down. He has a big poof of white hair and bushy eyebrows that rise and fall with excitement as he talks about his far-flung excursions in search of rare plants.
Central America, Mexico, tropical America, Brazil, the South Pacific, Fiji, Samoa, Vanuatu.
With each plant, he has a wild story. There's one about staying in a remote village and his hut had a pyramid of skulls in it. Another time he was in the Amazon and his guide carried an AK to guard against jaguars.
I was on a plant collecting expedition in Vanuatu to go to this sacred waterfall. The villagers are terrified of this place. They have to go through a cannibal graveyard.
There's an Indiana Jones kind of quality to Leon. But instead of being an archaeologist who fights Nazis with a whip, he's a botanist trying to save plants from extinction.
I went to Fiji Islands to collect plants, and I had targeted this certain area that was unknown botanically. They had just burned 100,000 acres of it to plant sugarcane. So there goes who knows how many species were lost. And that's, we can't allow that to happen anymore. It's kind of crazy.
Leon has been planting trees in the ground here at his West Hollywood plant nursery for more than 30 years. But he doesn't actually own the land. That really became a problem a couple years back when the property owner sold the land to a developer. The new owner is David Porbaba, the founder of 4D Development. He's built big apartment towers in downtown and is building some mixed-use projects in Koreatown and West Adams with a floor of retail and apartments above. This site will soon become 6 condos with a restaurant on the ground floor.
And the end of September, suddenly we're told, oh, we have to get out by the end of the year. And with all these giant trees and all this vegetation, it's virtually impossible. And now with the crazy rents in Los Angeles, there's no place for us to go.
And did you reach out to West Hollywood City Council members?
I made a presentation. I went to City Council and I went to the Planning and Development, and their basic response is they can do whatever they want. And I offered them, listen, give me a piece of land. I'll plant a botanical garden for the city. No, we're not interested. It's like the resistance was crazy, or is it like Star Trek, resistance is futile. We are going to develop every square inch and there's nothing you can do about it.
John Kehoe sees it slightly differently. He heads up planning for the city of West Hollywood.
Our process includes an appeal period in which people can appeal a decision to a higher body. The project was not appealed to the Planning Commission or the City Council, and so that planning entitlement was approved.
We reached out to the developer but haven't heard back. John Kehoe says the developer has yet to submit building plans, and until construction plans are approved, no buildings can be demolished, but the trees can be removed. That would be upsetting to many plant enthusiasts, including Dylan Hannon, who oversees the Huntington's Tropical Collections and refers to Leon as a plantsman, a true enthusiast.
Nurseries tend to either be very generic, like Home Depot Garden Center, for example, which is just a resale operation, or they're specialized. You know, they're specialized in succulents or palms, particular plant groups. And Leon had kind of bits of everything. He had unusual palms and shrubs and bromeliads, all kinds of things. So it's very eclectic.
Leon grew up in Los Angeles. He's been obsessed with plants for as long as he can remember.
You know, I used to go around on my tricycle collecting seeds. I made lists of plants when I was 12 years old that still I haven't been able to get that plant. Some things are just so elusive.
Where's your family from originally?
I'm actually Sephardic Greek and a Holocaust survivor. And then there was a grandfather. Of course, he was murdered by the Nazis. I never met him, but he was a plant nut. And he was well known in Salonika for growing things that no one else could grow.
Did you grow up in a house filled with plants?
My plants? Oh, yeah. Kid, everyone remembers me from the fourth grade. I brought my Venus flytrap to class and put it on an overhead projector, and it was gigantic on the screen, and I had a living fly with the tweezers, and I fed it. It clamped down so hard, the whole class jumped out of their seats screaming.
Leon studied botany at UCLA. He started working as a landscape designer and then took over this corner in 1988.
It was just an empty lot with nothing in it and a lot of hope.
He's made his mark on West Hollywood in ways beyond his store. Soon after the city was incorporated in 1984, Leon was living next door to a city planner, and he saw a proposed list of tree species. Leon gave the city council his own list.
When you see a pink tababuia, when you see a flame tree, when you see the orchid trees, it's all because I put them on the list. Otherwise, the city would have been populated with Italian cypress and deciduous trees. I argued West Hollywood is a subtropical city, and it should be made as such. I mean, here we can grow more kinds of plants than you can in anywhere in the world.
He has almost a spiritual reverence for plant life.
Plants are a wonder of the world, and it's the glue that holds all life together. Everything begins with the plants, and then the microorganisms, the insects, the mammals, the reptiles, everything is all apart. It's all interconnected.
It's another irony that Leon's store is closing just as a cultural obsession with plants is in full swing. Instagram feeds by plant influencers devoted to succulents and philodendrons, macrame wall hangers at craft fairs, and art happenings around town centered on a 1970s record called Mother Earth's Plantasia. One young customer, Katie Zitnik, stopped in to buy a spider plant.
My whole wall in my room is covered with plants from here. I use them as housewarming presents. That makes me sad that this place isn't going to be here anymore.
So what does Leon Massoth plan to do? Right now, he's hoping to find a benefactor and a new home, but he's feeling desperate.
Now L.A. is just going to be, you know, a scene of corporate nurseries, no diversity, the same direction as everything. We'd like to stay here and continue our work.
Leon is hoping for a miracle. He has until December 30th to clear his botanical garden out before the bulldozers come in. For Greater LA, I'm Avishai Artsy.
Next up, California State Assemblyman Chad Mays talks about his decision last week to switch from the Republican Party to no party at all, and whether others will follow. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You are back now with Greater LA. I'm Rico Galliano. California Assemblymember Chad Mays was at one point the leader of the Assembly's Republican caucus. Last week, he dropped out of the Republican Party and re-registered with no party preference. That makes him the second California politician to leave the GOP this year. With me to talk about his decision is Assemblymember Mays himself. He represents the 42nd District, which covers Palm Springs and Yucca Valley. Thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So back in 2017, you lost your Republican leadership position in the Assembly because you sided with Democrats. You extended the California's cap and trade environmental policy. What happened since then that finally made you decide to leave the party?
Well, I don't know if there was one particular instance other than just an understanding that our political system is broken. I do believe our two-party system is failing us. The activism between with the Republicans and with the Democrats, I think, is hurting our democracy. And so what do you do about that? You know, what can you do about that? Well, a small thing that you can do is say, you know, enough of the partisanship, and it's time just to go independent. And that's what I did.
So it has less, you're saying, to do with the Republican Party than with just the general idea of kind of divisiveness in politics?
Yeah, I mean, both parties today are controlled by individuals who are unelected by the people as a whole. And they're incredibly strong. In fact, I just found out this morning, got word that the local Democratic clubs have been barred from inviting me to come and speak, that if they give me any oxygen at all, that their charters could be revoked. And I think to myself, what is wrong? What have we become? I've over the course of the last couple of days, I've been getting a lot of supportive emails, and I've been getting text messages from folks saying, you know, now that you're no longer Republican, I can vote for you. And then I've gotten a few, and mostly on social media, saying that now that I'm no longer Republican, people, they won't vote for me. Well, just stop and think about that for a bit. What is wrong? What is wrong with that? It's not about the person. It's about the jersey. It's about the team. And politics shouldn't be about the team. We're all Americans. We're all Californians. We should be focusing as elected officials, as policymakers, on policies that make people's lives better, not on blind party loyalty. And I think that currently in our current state of affairs and in politics in this country, is it's just incredibly divisive, and it's because of that petty political partisanship.
You mentioned the voters that you've spoken to. Tell me about the conversations that I'm sure must have ensued with your Republican colleagues. What are they saying to you?
I've had a couple of them saying, you know, Chad, I wish I could do it too. I can't give you any names. I've also had those that have called with their displeasure, saying, you know, that we're still friends, but you know, they're very disappointed that I'm not on the team any longer. And I think, well, what do you mean? What team are you talking about? Are you talking about the team that believes in low taxes and limited government, less regulation, that believes in freedom and free markets? Because I'm still on that team. Are you talking about the team that is just the label? We have lost our way in this country, especially in regards to politics. It's all about what team that you're on. And if the team says it's good, then you think that it's good. If the team says it's bad, then you think it's bad. Our politics are broken. That needs to stop. We need to get back to civility. We need to get back to being Americans. We need to get back to being Californians and work toward solutions that benefit all of us.
Let me ask you about the politics of that, because it seems to me the GOP is so diminished in this state, especially after the last election. Why do you think the party is continuing on that path when it seems like it's been consistently punished by California voters for doing so?
Because I think that all politics is no longer local. All politics is now national. It's like a franchise. If you go to If you go to a McDonald's in North Carolina, it's just like going to the McDonald's here in California. Mm. Well, a Republican in Alabama now is just like a Republican in California, because the brand, the narrative is all coming out of Washington, D.C. And that brand, that narrative, the things that they're doing in D.C. do not fit with what Californians desire. And that's why we're getting beat, I say we, that's why those on the right, that's why Republicans have been getting beat over and over and over again, because they have not differentiated themselves from the Republicans back in Washington, D.C.
Well, let's talk about maybe having an alternative to those two parties. You're part of a group called New Way California, along with former Governor Schwarzenegger. As I understand it, that was created to steer the state GOP more moderate. But even in the last summit for New Way, some speakers suggested a third party might not be out of the question. Now you're not even in the GOP anymore. So what do you think? What is New Way's focus going to be now?
Yeah, and New Way's goal was to be able to moderate the Republican Party. And I think we found it very difficult to be able to do, because, again, when you have this noise coming out of Washington, D.C. that is furious, it's very hard to be able to challenge that. In regards to a third party, I've heard from people for the last couple of years saying, you know, we've got to do something different. And then you'll hear some people argue, well, you know, there should just be independence, you know, the two parties and then just independence. I do think that there has to be some organization and some infrastructure for those that are pragmatic, that don't buy into the nonsense that the two parties are putting out there. There does have to be some organization. There does have to be some infrastructure. I don't know what that looks like yet. I do know that there's a group out of Northern California that thinks that a new party, I think they're calling it the Common Sense Party. And, you know, there's some good people that are involved with that. I don't know if that's the answer, but I'm sure over the next couple of weeks we'll be having some conversations with some folks to see what the future might look like.
Finally, you're the second Republican politician in California to leave the party this year. Who's next? Are you recruiting others maybe for a new party?
Yeah, I'm not recruiting others, but, you know, I can tell you privately that me making this jump, I'm not the only one that has suggested. There are less than a handful of folks on my side of the aisle, and I know that there's maybe a little more than a handful on the Democratic side that wish. I think it's much more difficult for a Democrat to be able to make the switch because of the the numbers are so large with their side. I mean, in the assembly, there's 61 Democrats in the assembly. So it would make it very difficult for them to be able to do that. But I think amongst leaders who actually have thought through this, they realize that the two-party system is broken and there's got to be some changes. So we'll wait to see what happens in the near future to see if anybody else is willing to make the jump.
Assemblymember Chad Mays, he represents parts of Riverside and San Bernardino counties. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, coming up, Gustavo Arellano gives us his Orange County line on a new scandalous revelation roiling the OC Sheriff's Office. Yes, there is another one. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. Stay with us. Onward now with Greater LA. I'm Rico Galliano. As is our custom on Mondays, we are off to get the latest from Orange County. Today, yet another revelation in an ongoing series of revelations about internal affairs at the OC Sheriff's Office. The office is already under federal investigation for improperly using jailhouse informants to get inmates to confess. And a recent audit revealed nearly a third of crime evidence was being booked late by sheriff's deputies in violation of policy. Four deputies have lost their jobs over that so far. Now comes testimony the department department buried dozens of internal affairs complaints. And here with the details is OCOG Gustavo Arellano with KCRW's Orange County Line. Hello, Gustavo.
Hola, Rico.
Nice to speak with you. So this information comes from a testimony back in September by a Sergeant William West. What exactly did he say in that hearing?
So this was involving a case involving, I mean, there's been so many allegations of corruption against Orange County Sheriff's Department. So he's saying in certain cases that the department had evidence, but just didn't share it, didn't share it with the public at large, didn't share it with the public defender's office. And this doesn't really come as a surprise to anyone who has been watching the Orange County Sheriff's Department over the past 15 years, arguably even further than that.
And it's many, many cases, it's dozens of cases, right?
Oh, yeah. No, and this is it's actually two bombshells within a month, because as you said earlier, early December, the sheriff's department said, oh, yeah, by the way, we had this audit back earlier this year, over 2 years, that a third of the evidence submitted to the Orange County Sheriff's Department during our investigations was never turned in or turned in late. And then an even smaller audit said 47% of the reports that said that they were supposed to have evidence didn't have them at all. So it's just one blunder after another blunder.
Okay, so going back to Sergeant West's testimony, he talks about a cool kids club. The deputies were punished selectively. Who are the people who were most often spared from the consequences of mishandling this information?
Some of the deputies involved in there. So this is actually going back to the era of Sandra Hutchins, who was a predecessor to Don Barnes. So these are like the favorite kids. These are the people who Sandra, when she knew the writing was on the wall and she wasn't going to run for re-election, or, you know, as she said, she was going to retire. These were people who were doing bad things, and so they were not going to be disciplined. And Don Barnes, who was the undersheriff for her and is the current sheriff, he knew all about all of this and just allowed that to pass on.
So West also says that he was asked to misfile information or destroy files altogether. Pretty big deal. What are the ramifications if that turns out to be true?
Well, you're not supposed to do that. So the ramifications, you have a newish district attorney, Todd Spitzer, who is really upset about all these allegations going on in the sheriff's department. So if he finds the evidence, he can, in theory, prosecute. On the other hand, you also have the sheriff's department. They could internally reprimand. So with the evidence that was not logged in, he did fire four people and he disciplined seven others. And what's interesting is that Barnes is kind of playing both sides. On one hand, he's saying, yes, there were bad things, but we handled it internally and everyone should trust us to handle it internally. And on the other hand, we also pushed some of those cases onto the district attorney's office and they declined to prosecute at all. So he's trying to literally, he's playing, we're the innocent ones here. And anyone who has any critiques of how we do things, they're completely wrong. But again, this is a sheriff's department that really at this point has no moral authority in Orange County. A couple of years ago, of course, you had this notorious jailhouse breakout. And then there's been a spat of deaths in the Orange County jails, again, going back 10, 15 years. So nowadays, you hear this information, people are like, oh, gosh, again? And really, we're supposed to believe anything the sheriff's department says?
Well, I mean, speaking of which, there is an internal affairs employee who worked with West, and he says that all but one of the cases that West was talking about have actually been investigated. Either they have or they haven't. Who is right here? Why are we seeing this discrepancy?
Well, you know, no one's right if everyone's wrong, right? So this is what the sheriff's department is saying. It's like, yeah, oops, we messed up, guys, but don't worry. We took care of it, and this is not going to happen again. This is the same song and dance that's been going. I mean, really going back to the days of Brad Gates. So we're going back to the 1980s. It seems every couple of years there's another scandal happening in the Orange County Sheriff's Department. They say, we're sorry, we apologize. The voters of Orange County, they'll move on. And now you have Don Barnes, not even, you know, he just got elected last year in 2018, and you're already having this cloud around him. And now you have a district attorney who's upset at you. In the past, the district attorney's office was pretty friendly with the sheriff's department. You're not seeing that right now.
So the claim has been made. What does happen next? You think Barnes will feel the heat?
Barnes is going to say, we took care of the problem. It wasn't even that much of a problem to begin with. And anyone who's against us is against law enforcement. But the ball is in the court of Todd Spitzer now. Todd Spitzer, who ran on a campaign of saying there is corruption in Orange County law enforcement. I'm going to come in and clear all of that out, including in my own department. We'll see what happens with Todd. And, you know, Todd is a crusader. And he also does not like that, you know, his sister department, the sheriff's department, there's allegations of malfeasance there. So the ball's in Todd's court.
All right, we'll see what the fallout might be. Gustavo Arellano with the Orange County Line, thanks so much.
Gracias.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, the struggles of high school can be bad enough, but when students have to start thinking about college and college applications, the stress really ramps up, and it's more intense than you may remember. Next on KCRW, it's The Business with Kim Masters. We are online at kcrw.com/greaterLA, where you can subscribe to the podcast. You can also share your questions and thoughts with us as well at kcrw.com/askgreaterLA. I'm Rico Galliano. I'll be back tomorrow for Steve Chiatakis. Speaking of whom, happy birthday, Steve's mom. Have a great day, everyone.